Hi, and welcome back to It's Pretty Personal, a podcast all about sharing South Asian stories. It's been a while since we last spoke. How are you doing? I feel like I enjoyed my week off so much so that I extended it by another week. Honestly, the break was only initially supposed to be for a week because at the time, I'd got so overwhelmed trying to balance everything and I needed to get on top of things that were sipping. But then I felt as though I needed more than just a week. Also because the first week I honestly spent it in bed binge watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But hey, we put ourselves first. And a lot has happened over my hiatus. The biggest thing for me personally was the fact that this podcast hit 10K listens. And I just want to say thank you, like from the bottom of my heart. It really means so much to me that you tune in every single week to listen to what I have to say. And I hope that this podcast provides you with that relatability or that comfort. But a lot has also been going on in the world too. For example, the COVID crisis in India, which is so heartbreaking to see the healthcare system there collapse and people in their thousands are dying every day. The fact that there are hospitals that are turning down patients and people are being treated in cars shows the seriousness of this issue. And I know this is really close to home for many of us who still have family there, like our grandparents. Also, in more recent news, everything that's been happening in Palestine with the violent attacks and the ethnic cleansing. It just feels as though the world is a really dark place right now. And I feel like it's been like that for a while now with everything going on, not just the things in Palestine and India, but the farmers' protest, which is also happening 6 months later. They're still protesting. But seeing all these protests all around the world, and all the online activism that I've been seeing on social media, it kind of shows that there are good people in the world and there are people out there that are going to stand up for basic human rights and want the world to be a better place. I wanted today's podcast episode to be a little bit more lighthearted and hopefully something that will put a smile on your face. So what better topic than dating? Also because the UK is opening up and I think some of us need dating tips, not going to lie. Today, I'm joined by Radha, a real life Indian matchmaker. I think Indian matchmaking became a pop culture reference after the popular Netflix TV show Indian Matchmaking, something that we do talk about in this episode. But Radha is a US-based matchmaker working with single professionals who are looking to marry within their community. Being first generation herself, she knows the challenges with finding a partner that fits you culturally, both in your Western values and your Eastern background. So consider her your modern day Auntie G. Can I just say something? Some of the ways the Desi community have come up with to meet people is so creative. Like a few months ago, I saw this trend on TikTok called Rishta Talk, where people were making profiles of their siblings or friends, asking for eligible single people to reach out, which is jokes. It was like an online dating app profile, but on TikTok. If anyone had a Rishta Talk profile made of them, like, please let me know. Was it successful? Because I am so intrigued. Like, I want someone out there to be in a relationship because of TikTok. Like, how did you meet? We met through TikTok. That's so cool. Also, before we get into this episode, don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast if you're new. Write a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts because reviews really do help podcasts grow. So please support my podcast. And also follow the podcast on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Pretty Personal. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to get some dating tips. Hi, Radha.
Hi, Preeti. Thank you so much for having me.
How have you been?
Very good. Enjoying getting ready for the weekend.
I know, same. So I feel like everyone should get to know you a little bit better. So we're going to do some icebreaker questions. So the first question that I guess I want to know is, what's one thing that's happened today that you're grateful for?
Well, we recently got a new puppy. And she has been spending a lot of time in my office with me, just, you know, sleeping at my feet or playing in the office. So that makes me really happy.
What dog is it?
Oh, she's a little bit of a mix. She's a half Shar Pei, half unknown background, all cuddles and love. So it's fun.
So cute. I'm such a dog person. I love dogs.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that you want to do in 2021?
Well, you know, COVID came and has really put a spin on everyone's lives. So it might be a little cliche, I feel like a lot of people are saying, but just get back to a little bit of normalcy. And for me, what that means is being able to go out and about with my family again. We love going out to eat. We love checking out the city that we live in and just interacting with the world around us. And COVID has unfortunately driven us all inside. And for me personally, the biggest thing, you know, being a mother and a business owner and all of that entails is I'm sick of doing dishes. I want to be able to go out and have somebody serve me a margarita and eat in a restaurant. Like, that is my dream for 2021.
It's like the simple things. I just want to eat out. That's all I want.
I've taken the restaurant industry for granted, I think, and never again.
And finally, what is the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome?
So I struggle with this one a little bit because I always feel like I'm not at the end of my life. I haven't done everything that I want to do. And, you know, essentially, if I overcome something, then in my mind, I'm like, well, it really wasn't a challenge. It was just something that I had to learn or figure out how to do on my own. But if I had to pick something, I would say a challenge that I'm currently facing that maybe I haven't overcome yet, but I am actively recognized it and want to do something about. But that's as I continue to grow, you know, in this business, I've been doing it for around 2 years now, but I've really taken off recently, as you mentioned, alluding to the Netflix show earlier. So as I'm facing this new growth in my business, ensuring that I'm growing in the right ways, right? Is my network growing the way I want it to? Are we getting a viable database? Is it going to be serving the clientele that I want to serve? So all of the challenges that come with growing so quickly, I think is what I'm currently working on.
Like, the show has done wonders for you for sure. And when you think about matchmaking, I'm a bit like, you know, when it's like random rich, they come into your door with these random people you don't know. Like, that's what you associate matchmaking with. You don't associate it with the fact that it's tailored towards you and there's someone that's like coaching you on the side. Like, there's a lot to matchmaking that I just didn't know. And that show kind of, although there was a lot wrong with that show, the show actually kind of told me what the matchmaking process was.
And I think that's what I've been seeing a lot of lately with the new inquiries and all of the new clients that I've been getting is that they're always familiar with the matchmaking concept, you know, back home in the motherland, if you will. But now seeing it that, hey, it's still a prevalent kind of activity. People are still using matchmakers. And then the Google, everybody recently that I've been interviewing and coming up, they're like, well, we just found you on Google. We just typed in matchmaking and boom, you popped up. And in my mind, I'm like, well, that's great. If Google is the way you found me, that means that something is working right.
That's good SEO right there.
Yeah, exactly. I think just the biggest advantage was it introduced the concept of matchmaking to a new generation of people.
Hey, you go, girl. So I thought the presence of today's podcast, I think we should talk about the talking stage. And that's the thing that I really want your insight on as a matchmaker, for example. I think you'll be perfect for this because I think it's quite easy in today's day and age to kind of find a guy when it comes to swiping of the apps or whatnot. The issue is, how do you get from the swipe to, yeah, I find this guy cute, to bagging that first date? And then from that first date, how to get that second date? So, and all of that involves communication. It involves talking.
Well, I think that whole advent of the talking phase and all of the stuff that's coming out now, there was no talking phase 10, 15 years ago. You were either going on a date with a person or not, because there was no technology, right? There wasn't like text messaging wasn't as prevalent. When I was dating my current husband at the time, we would email each other. That was how we communicated. There wasn't text messages were like by the word almost at that point. So the idea being that if you like somebody, you had to meet them relatively soon. But now with the advent of technology and the apps and the accessibility, you look at your communication in general, even with your own, I would say with your parents or your family members, it's been relegated to text messaging. It's so much more technology-based in everything that we do that it was natural relationships would also follow suit. And so that's where the advent of talking phase came from, I guess.
I think the one thing that always makes me laugh is the fact that media, movies, whatever you call it, they've kind of made this whole playing games a thing. Like, he texts you and then you have to wait that 3 hours before you text him back because you don't want to look too.
All these rules, exactly, like the 3-day rule. But again, I also think that those are very old notions, which is why movies and books are still kind of in that time frame, because it's a more romantic notion on how you should be meeting people or doing things.
I just wanted to know, like, I feel like the talking stage is always the most confusing stage because you're just a bit like, what are we doing? Are we together? Are we not together? Are we supposed to be dating more people? Are you dating more people? Like, do you not find it the most confusing thing?
Absolutely. And the idea is, right, it's like, there's so much into it, like the game mentality. All right, am I too forward for asking if he's seeing other people? Is it weird that I'm not seeing other people? Like, you just get in your head a lot. But it's kind of what you mentioned earlier, Preeti. It's all about communication. Right? I think that's the most important and fundamental to any relationship. Figuring out your love language, you don't have to be in love with a person, but just knowing what is a good communication method for you and being able to be open and expressive in your style from the beginning will help you set expectations.
Yeah. I think like the honesty thing is so important, but I think a lot of time people are a bit like, I can't be too honest because you don't want the other person to judge them. For example, there's like certain things that you just wouldn't talk about on a first date, right? Like, what are the kind of things that you think people should not talk about on a first date?
You should never talk about an ex, ever, ever, ever. Never talk about an ex on a first date, regardless of whether it's in a good connotation or you think it's just conversation. Do not bring up your ex, boys or girls, doesn't matter. It's weird. It gets interpreted in a weird way and you don't want to start off on that foot. And then some of those kind of dating rules that we talked about do still apply. Don't talk about religion or politics unless that is something that you identify strongly with and you're using that as a way to understand if this person is going to be a right fit for you. So those are kind of like those third rail topics I would say stay away from. Your first date, you should approach it from a very lighthearted and exciting experience because it is exciting. You're meeting somebody new and there's so much potential and opportunity there. And that's what you should focus on your first date. And I also recommend to keep them short and sweet because you don't want to be nervous and you don't want things to go, you know, farther than maybe you had anticipated and turn a good moment into something that goes out of control.
So how long do you think the average first date should be?
Well, in this day and age, because we're going from the talking stage and all of that, I think that a good first date should anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour, but create it around or structured around something that's going to have a natural stopping point so that if it's not going well, you're not sucked in for the whole night. But if it is going well, you can continue to figure out what you're going to do next or make next plans and move forward. So for an example, you know, coffee is cliche. Everybody goes out and meet for a coffee, for a drink. Instead of that, I recommend structuring it around an activity. So in the States, when things were open, we have a lot of like ping pong bars that were opening up or axe throwing bars, something that includes a little bit of a fun activity, but also you have to make a reservation for that table. You have to reserve your lane and you know it's only going to be for an hour. So it gives you that natural stopping point. It's not a constant, you and I are looking at each other for the full 30 minutes and have to talk the whole time. I think that's what the biggest challenge right now with COVID and Zoom dating and FaceTime dating is because you have to be on the entire time and it's just not natural. That's not how we interact as human beings generally. So having to do that, even in a face-to-face setting, is an unnecessary a strain or anxiety. So have an activity that has a natural stopping point that gives you an ability to continue if it's going well.
That's a really good tip, actually. I think my worst date will be if I had to go dinner with someone because I'm like, you wait 45 minutes for the food and you got to do the talking and you got to do the eating and then like, it's a lot.
And the awkwardness of the check. More and more I talk to my clients, it's always like, you know, what do we do when the check comes or how do we approach this? And in my mind, it's like, it's such a trivial, you know, it's something like $20, 20 pounds. Like it's not that big of a deal if you're going for a drink. But the concept of like who reaches for it first and is a girl really serious about paying or she's just saying it, eliminate all of that as much as possible. I think you'll be in a much better position if you're thinking about a future with that person, just getting that awkwardness out of the way. So dinners are an absolute no for me on a first date.
Okay, so I want to clear this up. Okay, who do you think should pay on a first date?
Oh, that's so tough. Here's why I say it's so tough, because I don't want to step on people's personalities. You know, I think that naturally some people, you know, everybody has different attitudes around money and how they budget for themselves and what their financial background is. So I don't want to say that it should always be the guy who pays, you know, because then you get into instances where men are a little bit more hesitant to actually go out on first dates because of whatever background they might be in. Or also, I don't want it to be where females are like, well, I'm strong and independent and I want to pay. That's wonderful because I also am strong and independent and, you know, we share all the expenses in my household. But the idea being that you don't necessarily know what personality types each other has and is that going to be an unnecessary sticky point that comes up later in your relationship? So avoiding issues around money if possible is great. So, you know, going Dutch is usually the easiest way to do it. But if any one person is adamant, I would say don't create a scene or cause a fight. Just let it be. If the other person's like, no, I got this, or really, really insisting on paying, let them. Because if it does develop into a relationship, I think that down the line, that shows you a lot about how they feel about money and how they feel about their spending habits and stuff. So use it more of like a data point in your relationship.
I like that because I actually did a survey on my Instagram and I think 80 or 90% of people said to split it. Like, it's not that deep. No one cares. Just split it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I really want to know, I'm loving this conversation, by the way. I'm so excited. But the other thing that I really want to know is that I think sometimes there's this onus on like the guy always making the first move. And sometimes us as females, although we are strong, independent females, we kind of expect the guy to also make the first move. Why do you think that is?
I think, like you mentioned, it's the media, it's the culture, it's the narrative that we've been taught since we were children, right? Unfortunately, having Eastern cultural backgrounds, you also get a lot of that taboo-ness that's associated to women advocating for themselves, especially when it's a relationship or dating or marriage scenario. So combining that with what we constantly hear about in movies and books and stories, that just becomes what we feel is normal. But I mean, I think the challenge or the task for our generation is to flip that narrative and to change what is perceived as normal.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think at the end of the day, they're not going to know. So just text them. And this is the thing that I think a lot of people are like very nervous because, like, oh my God, I might be too desperate, which is a taboo when it comes to women making the first move. This whole notion that if a girl makes the first move, she's desperate. But if a guy makes it, it's okay. But then we're trying to be like gender equality and equal rights for all. So why is it weird that a girl's making the first move?
And I would say too, you know, the more and more that we're embracing equality, you're seeing, you know, that old notion of guy always having to make the first move. It's reinforcing that men have to be manly, right? That men have to be the dominating or the aggressive person. And that's not the case anymore. We are strong, independent women and we can make our own choices and decisions as well. So why not be the first one to quote unquote make a move? It doesn't matter who's first because at the end of the day, each of us have different strengths and skills and let's play to them.
What advice would you give to someone? So say this is a girl out here who's listening and she really fancies a guy. I think a lot of people listening probably do fancy a guy. And they want to make the first move, but they don't know how. What would you say to them?
So this might be a little controversial, but I think that, again, in this day and age of technology, you know, check them out on Instagram, check them out on LinkedIn, just find out, you know.
Do the stalk.
Yes, do the stalk. Nothing wrong with that. Honestly, I know sometimes people are really weird about it, but then you're private on social media and that's fine. That's your privacy. But if the information is out there, do a little bit of homework. I think that making the first move is more connecting. If you have something that's going to make you stand out, or if there's something that helps you connect with that person, why do girls get skeeved out when dudes just slide into their DMs? Because it's like, you didn't take the time to get to know me at all. You just made it about something vulgar, inappropriate. So clearly your intentions are not there. So as a female, we have maybe have the better or the right intentions. So let's showcase that and put it out there. And ultimately, I advocate this for all of my clients. I tell everyone, before you're out there putting yourself into a relationship scenario or things like that, make sure you're comfortable with who you are, right? Do a lot of soul searching, introspection, meditating. Be comfortable with who you are. Take the time to work on where you want to be and what you want to do. And that confidence will just show through when you're approaching guys, if you want to approach guys.
I love that. I think that was very good, honest advice. And the final thing that I kind of want to say for this section of podcast is, I think a lot of times when we're texting someone, there is a point where you're like, oh, I really like this person. But then you don't see the red flags. So what are some of the red flags that we should be looking out for when we're texting someone?
I think in a text scenario, especially when you have not met the person yet, the biggest red flag is our internal biases, right? Are we viewing this conversation through our lens of what I want this relationship to come about? How I'm viewing this guy based on maybe some of the research that I've done and things like that. So be aware of your internal bias on what you're projecting on this conversation. I also am a firm believer. I give this advice to all my clients that don't spend too much time on text. Transition to a phone call first so you can get a little bit more of an understanding of what's their personality, what's their communication style. And then once you know them, you can go back to text. That's totally fine. But the first couple of interactions, if you just do it via text, you're not going to be able to ask like, so what are your thoughts, hopes, and dreams in a text message, right? Like, it's just impossible. And from my own personal experience, you might feel this way too, Preeti. Like when I'm texting, it's a lot of like on the fly. I'll look at it when I have a chance. It's not immediate. And then on the other end, that person is like, well, she left me unread. Oh my God, what does that mean? And avoid it as much as possible by being direct. That's how I feel.
Oh my God. I can 100% relate to being left on read. Don't worry. Like,
I wish that messages had like an unread function, like email does.
I'd rather just know that you just left boot it to me. Like,
yeah.
I think that's so true. I think the other thing that I would say from my own experience is if they're leaving it really long days, like for example, if you texted in the morning and then they text you 24 hours later, I'm like, okay, cool. Once, twice, let it slide. If it's consistent and they're consistently messaging me after 24 to 48 hours, they're not interested because you're on your phone 24/7. So if you can't read my text message, but you can like stuff on Instagram, no, that is a red flag right there. So it's girls, guys, whoever's listening, if that person you fancy is liking stuff on Instagram, but can't be bothered to like message you back, red flag right there.
Like a mantra that I live by in my life is you make time for the things you want to make time yes. for. All busy individuals, everybody's got a million things going on. We're all dealing with anxiety from the pandemic right now, but you make time for the things that are important to you. And as you mentioned, if somebody's letting it go to, you know, 24 hours, 2 days, then clearly this was not as important as other things in their life. And unfortunately, the reality we live in, a lot of times it's because you're talking with or texting with multiple people at the same time, and they're not giving you the attention that you deserve.
I think that's one thing that I actually wanted to ask you about was, you know, in Indian matchmaking, the Netflix show, if people haven't seen it, there's a Netflix show all about Indian matchmaking where a matchmaker, like rather, sets people up. But in there, she said that you should concentrate on one person at a time. How true do you think that is?
100%. That's one place Simon and Dia are very compatible. Even when I send referrals to my clients, it's one at a time because I'm taking the time to thoughtfully present something, looking at their background, vetting everyone that I'm presenting. So if I'm sending you somebody and I'm spending all this time and effort on it, you should take the time and effort to look at that person objectively and honestly and feel whether or not this is going to work for you. I might have a few more people that I want to show you, and that's totally fine, but I would rather you take one person at a time to review it. This mentality of the carousel or swiping, it unfortunately has permeated our consciousness as a society, not just in dating. It's how we're viewing everything in life as well. If I find one, I'll probably find three more that are exactly the same or different or better. But the idea being, I want you, if you're serious, then focus on one at a time.
So let's go back to basics. So say if we're talking to a total dating newbie, they've never dated in their life before. I don't really know what dating is. How would you explain the process to them? They want a relationship, but how do they get started?
Absolutely. And I actually have a lot of clients who are like this, you know, especially in our culture where, you know, up until uni, it's always like study, 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 study. And then the day you graduate, it's like, get married, get married, get married. And you're like,
yeah, where's your boyfriend?
Yeah. How was I supposed to develop the social skills needed to find a boyfriend? You know, I appreciate that you want me to get married. So do I. But when was I going to do this? I'm a doctor, right? Like things like that. So I would say for newbies who have never really dated or been in that kind of an experience before, dating is essentially the time period you take between meeting a new person and deciding whether or not to get into a relationship. So that can be multiple different ways you do it. Now we've got this little prefix to dating called talking, which, you know, is a couple of weeks or whatnot. Then I feel like dating should be a time where you guys are getting to know each other much more at a deeper level outside of that superficial stuff, which talking is much more about the superficial, right? How was your day? What are your thoughts around something that happened in pop culture?
What's your favorite food? What's your favorite color? Where would you go on holiday? Yeah. Very surface level small talk.
Exactly. But when you are in a dating relationship where that means you're actually physically meeting up with people, doing things together, being in different experiences together, figure out, right, is he a good problem solver? Is she ambitious the way that in her career, that the way she told me she was? So understanding that next level, you know, you already know what you want out of a relationship. So identifying those factors in that person, because you've gotten to the point where like, okay, she's, you know, her favorite color isn't orange because I hate orange or whatever. Like we're past all of that. Now it's like, okay, how do they interact with wait staff or Uber drivers, right? Is that the kind of person that you envision yourself being with and in through all different scenarios of life? So take that dating experience to experience world and scenarios together and evaluate if you guys are compatible in that way.
So then say if they went on a date, they had a great time. How would this person know that person's serious or interested after the first date? Are there signs that they kind of let off? Like, What happened?
I would say for the first date, there are absolutely warning signs to look out for. You had mentioned before how we're all attached to our phones 24 hours a day. And that is true, very true. But how are they with conversation, right? Are they still constantly flipping back to their phone? Or are they making eye contact with you? Are they considerate of you? So if you're going to a restaurant to eat, are they considerate? Like, oh, what kind of table do you prefer? Or I like to sit by the window in a booth. Are you okay with that? Right. So those small kind of interactions that might seem very basic, but understanding that, you know, how do you feel when something like that happens? Also, don't ignore those feelings or red flags. If something rubs you the wrong way, just because you're so excited that it's new and it's on paper, it all lines up, don't ignore that, because 9 times out of 10, there's something there that is enough for you to remember, or it sticks out to you. And that's the whole point of dating, is to find those little signs and signals so that when you know you're ready to move forward, or sometimes you don't know you're ready to move forward. You would ask, how do you know when you're ready to get to the next stage? Sometimes you don't. There's a lot of environmental pressure. There's a lot of, you know, family pressure. There's people that I know that have been in relationships where they've been together 6-8 months. And then when they break up, they realize, like, actually, I never really liked that person. I don't know why I dated him for 8 months or we were in a relationship for so long. And I don't want you to get down that path.
I think that's very true. But then say if they go on the first date and they really hit it off, how would they get a second date kind of thing? How would they know that actually, I think I can ask this person out on a second date?
Short of just doing it.
Just got to bite the bullet.
Yeah. Being upfront and direct, because if this is something that you're interested in, why play the games, right? And if the other person is not interested, wouldn't you rather just know ahead of time?
Oh yeah, 100%.
With this as well, there's been lots of people who are like, yeah, I don't want to go on the second date, but have come around a few months later in a non-sleazy way, but in a good way, and been like, you know what? I know that maybe at the time things didn't work out between us, but I would be open to meeting up again for a coffee and talking. And you realize, like, dating is about experiences. It doesn't have to be all or nothing with every single person that you date. You realize as you evolve and change, priorities change, that people are in different stages of their life, that you might be compatible in different ways. And there's nothing wrong with seeing friends and being amicable with people you date.
One thing that you said was like the red flags. Your gut feeling is 100% a thing. I've been on dates where I really, really liked the person, but there was just something in my gut that was like, that didn't sit right with me. Ooh, that was weird. Dude ended up ghosting me anyway. So it turned out that was my gut feeling.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Do you see? So like, luckily for you, you know, you're very bright and you know what you're doing. So that was something that you recognized and you were able to get over. But some people can't, especially newbies in dating, that, you know, a ghosting experience really can emotionally wreck you. And being a little bit more self-aware of your triggers and how you perceive things to be maybe will empower you to take the lead in a relationship so that you're not opening yourself up to potential heartbreaker issues down the line.
Yeah. And then I think the final thing that I kind of wanted to ask you is that, how do you know that someone's serious with you?
Well, if you work with me, you're going to know they're serious, because everybody I work with is serious about getting into a relationship that leads to marriage. But in general, I would say that, this might sound a little new agey, but you're vibing, right? You guys can, you get to that point in your relationship where you understand the subtext of people's actions and what they're doing. You understand each other's priorities. And in the beginning, he might, you know, you might expect, okay, if I texted you, you better text me back in 24 hours just so I know you're engaged and interested. But if you've been dating for 6 months and you know that your partner is working on a really busy project at work, that he's not going out with his friends or anything, like outside of a check-in text once a day, maybe I do need to leave him alone. If you get that and you guys get that understanding of each other, or family drama or trauma, you're willing to be a part of it and help your partner through that. You get to that next level where it's much more of a, we're sharing everything about each other and we're going to work through things together, goods and bad. The idea that if something exciting happens to you in your life, the first person you want to tell is your partner. So getting to that stage is when you know that, okay, this is the one. Now, there's obviously going to be things here and there that don't hit off. You're never going to have a perfect relationship. You're not the perfect person and you're never going to find the perfect partner. That's just a part of life. So dealing with what we've learned about through movies and media and understanding what's reality versus what we fantasize about also is going to help you understand when a relationship turns to a point where it's, yeah, this is the one for me.
like you said, the movies and the media, they kind of just make it out like they're this perfect person. And I think a lot of times people dismiss people just because of a really small thing, like not got a beard or like, you know, that really superficial stuff. But if your personality gets on and you're like, damn, I think I found someone who's very similar to me, that is so rare to find in general. Someone that's exactly like you, not exactly like you, but majority of like you, and you have the same kind of interests or you have the same kind of the way your mind works. I think that's more important. Obviously, if they're like got muscles and stuff, that's a plus, isn't it?
Oh, attractiveness is a thing. You know, the show got a lot of heat for, you know, the first episode was called Slim, Trim and Slender or something like that. Slim, Beautiful. So they get a lot of heat for everybody wanting to have an attractive person, this or that. But in my mind, you know, attractiveness is subjective and everybody, you know, attractiveness is a part of any species of animal, human, whatever. So you need to have an underlying factor of attractiveness. Now, I don't think it should be superficial to the extent that I need somebody who's ripped with an 8-pack or something like that. So think about the whole package of the person, their personality, their demeanor, their interactions. My clients that I work with, I challenge them. I ask them to look past that initial meeting phase. I want to know, what kind of a husband do you want? What kind of a father to your children do you want? Think long term. You know, we're all career oriented women. We're hoping that our men are also very, you know, structured in their career. And again, why not talk about that? Like, where do you want to be in your life in 5 years? How do you imagine, you know, getting to retirement? So thinking about things outside of looks will give you a full picture. But I agree, you got to be attracted to
them. Yeah. I think like for me, I think you have to find the person good looking to like get in there, but it's the personality that will retain you. Like, you don't want a good looking person that just has zero personality and you just don't get on with just because they're good looking. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And I mean, you don't want it to lead to issues down the line, because I have seen too where you know it's on Instagram everywhere, hashtag couple goals, is a beautiful couple, they take amazing photos together and all that, but then they're not necessarily vibing, they're not necessarily on the same wavelength, and we don't know, like, how is it going to be when the looks fade? What is left? What's the substance in your relationship?
Exactly. Like, I think for me, it's like, I just want someone I can have a laugh with. Like, you know, you can do that stupid thing, sis.
No, my husband and I can tell you, we've been married for 11 years. We've known each other for a little over 12 years. Like, the things that we do for each other now, the amount of poop that we've wiped up off the floor, you would never have imagined. So like, the fact that we do this stuff together, we're in it to win it, like, that is what's important. And it doesn't hurt that he's good looking. So
exactly, it does not hurt.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your matchmaking. So how did you even get into matchmaking?
Yeah, actually, I had a couple of family who had approached me over a course of a summer, I would say. Radha, you know so many people, like, we are looking to get back in the dating game. You know, if you know someone, let me know. And in my mind, I'm like, it's interesting that people keep approaching me and asking them to set them up or hook them up. One day it was like, okay, I can do something here. I can just informally, I can be one of those aunties. Let me figure this out. And I started writing it down on paper and realized that, oh my God, I've already had like 12 people approach me in the last 3 to 5 months. There's got to be something here. How do I get this spreadsheet to actually manifest and turn into something? I started doing my research, figured out, right? I didn't want to get into the app game. I have zero technology background. I wouldn't even know where to start with that. And I think that apps are really a modern day crisis that's happening in the relationship and dating community. We'll talk about that another time, I'm sure. So I didn't want to do an app. And then I also looked into it, right? In most South Asian cultures, matchmaking was happening very informally, or if it was formal, it was through community organizations, right? So samajis, religious institutions, things where it just seems so much more focused on what do the family want and where are you from back in India, and just criteria that didn't make sense for people who are born and raised in another country or just looking for more in their relationship than, you know, a good husband, or I mean, a good father to their children. And then my own personal experience kind of came into that too. I knew, being born and raised in another country, that I also wanted to have somebody who was born and raised in that country, who understood the norms, understood that what it meant like to be a woman and trying to succeed in this world and navigate this world, but also bring with me the culture, the religion, the energy that I related to for the next generation, because children were important to me. So I figured, how do I instill all of that into a service, or what can I do with all of that? And matchmaking is what I came up with. And really, I would say in one sentence, if people ask me why I started this, it was because I'm trying to get my cousin married. So please reach out to me if you're interested.
Are you taking applicants from the UK?
So unfortunately, this time, no, I'm only working with US and Canada. You don't have to be a citizen, but you do have to be physically located within the North American region. This is a way for me to make sure that I'm safeguarding against any potential fraud that has been prevalent with some other sites and things like that. And it's a way for me to also ensure that, you know, my clients who are looking for that experience of a Western culture, born and raised kind of, or even just brought up with that mentality.
You know, with Indian matchmaking, I know we've touched upon the Netflix show quite a bit, but I think a lot of times it has actually portrayed matchmaking as something quite negative. And how is that different to what you do?
Well, for that show and the way Simandi works specifically, I would say I don't work with proxies or families. So I think one of the hardest parts of that show for me watching it was the biases of single men and versus single women. The way that she was interacting with them, it just didn't seem fair or equal or the same across the board. Whether it was women in India versus women in America, I think that that gender bias that she brought to the experience was something that I don't agree with. I mean, we all have our internal biases, like I mentioned before, but I think I am a little bit more aware around it and try to not come from that place when I'm working with my clients. I treat them all the same, regardless of gender. I would say that's one. Two, I don't think that being introduced through a matchmaker is the same as an arranged marriage. I think the word arranged marriage comes with a lot of negative connotation. You know, another reason why I don't work with proxies, because I want to make sure that the intent of the single individual is to be in a relationship, is to be married. In my own experience, when my parents were introducing people, you know, when I was younger, I found out that people they were introducing me to were already in relationships, or, you know, we didn't vibe for whatever reason, you know, or they were looking to stay in one geographic area. So getting all of those background kind of nuances out of the way is something that's important to me. I don't want to send you on a date with somebody who might not even be the same, prefer the same sexual preferences as you. We don't know. And I think that in this day and age, with our society being so open and us willing to venture out of those old school norms, we should also be open to making sure that we're catering to the preferences of everyone.
No, definitely. I completely agree with that. And I guess the other thing that I want to say is, what is the future for your matchmaking service, Single to Shadi?
Oh my gosh, what a good question. I feel like we're just getting our feet wet. I don't even thought about a future. No. My future is, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, is I really want to get to that kind of viable client pool so that as I'm continuing to make suggestions and make matches, that I have more distinct personalities to help me dive deeper when I'm matching. So right now, not that I'm doing it on a superficial level right now, but just continuing to layer in more of that long-term outlook, you know, views on children, views on living in a joint family. So being able to cater to the unique needs of all of my clients, I think I will get there once we have that larger user base. Long-term, I'm thinking like 5 years down the line, I would love to bring in additional matchmakers. So right now I do have a team, but my team is mostly focused on growth opportunities and marketing. I am the only matchmaker. So eventually down the line, I would love to expand, you know, get into different communities, UK, Australia. There's a lot more diaspora communities out there looking for a new way to be introduced. So that would be my dream long term, is to make sure that we're catering to all populations of the diaspora.
I'm sure that will happen. Honestly, I think you have a great business idea. And I think it's so true. Like, having a matchmaker isn't a bad thing. And although there are a lot of negative connotations with it, I personally don't think that it's a bad thing. It's just, I think it's a tailor-made dating service. Like, you're a human dating app, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the way I think of it too is I would cater to single professionals mostly. Like, you'll see that in all of my website and everything. The reason why I emphasize that is because as a working professional myself right now, I know that I outsource a lot of activities in my life, right? I have a cleaning service. I utilize Uber. I'm using services to help make my life easier. And the way that the dating scene is nowadays, having somebody to come in and help curate referrals and take some of that heavy lifting off of it for you, why not? We do it in every other aspect of our life. Why not in dating?
And I just want to end this podcast off with a little quick fire round. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of little questions, really easy going. So I guess the first question is, are you a morning person or a night owl?
I used to be a night owl when I was younger, but I quickly realized as I became an adult that being a morning person, I get so much more done. So I would say I'm a morning person now.
The worst chat-up line you have received?
Oh my gosh. It's been a while, obviously. I would say all of these kind of like people who are sliding into DMs, you would be surprised. I put out there explicitly, even before I started my matchmaking business, explicitly every social channel I was on, married, married, married. Like if you follow me on social, you'll see I've got a family and kids, but it does not prevent people from asking, chatting all the time. Oh, I just want to be friends, or you look so pretty, and just random gross things like that. I'm like, has this ever worked for you? Why do you keep doing this to everyone out there? I don't know.
I always get so surprised when people slide into people's DMs. I'm like, you think I'm going to read this? Like, you're going into my requests, I will read it and delete it.
Absolutely. Do not engage.
Exactly. The next one is, do you have an ideal first date place?
Right now, my husband and I, for our dates, because of COVID and everything, it's a lot of just walking around outside, being outside. So I would say for an ideal first date, if you're just starting out in a relationship, and especially with COVID, I still recommend that. Grab your Starbucks. So each of you have your own before you even meet at that designated area. Find a spot, a park spot or whatever, where there's going to be good people watching. There's going to be, you know, just a lot of good ambiance, and start out there. Just start out simple.
I really like that. My first ever date was basically just walking around London. That's a really nice date. Like, you just kind of sightseeing, but you're like with another person.
Oh yeah, I love that. And London's just such an iconic city.
Next one is Hollywood or Bollywood?
I'm a sucker for Bollywood when it's done well. You know, I grew up with the 90s and early 2000s, like Shah Rukh Khan and all of that. Like, I grew up with that. So the romantic notions and all of that is kind of, you know, I understand that, how that's been instilled in all of us. But I think that the Bollywood nowadays with, you know, Amazon Studios coming in and even Fox Search, like all of these new age kind of showcasing to the world that it's not the old Indian Bollywood that we're used to. I'm very much into that. I'm loving also, forget just the movies. I'm loving all of these TV shows and talk shows and reality shows, just showcasing that there's so much more to the Indian lifestyle than what old school Bollywood kind of sent, the message that was sent by that.
And my final question is, I know we touched upon it before, but I kind of want a one word answer. Who should make the first move?
Whoever is comfortable. Don't get hung up on the games. If you're ready, then make the move.
Yes. Oh my God. I love this conversation. I wish I could talk to you forever. I love your energy. I love this conversation. Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure chatting with you. I think what you're doing with your podcast is phenomenal. You're reaching a lot of people, you know, exposing different ways to think about all these traditional concepts. So thank you for your podcast and what you do as well.
Oh, thank you. That was really nice. I really hope you enjoyed that episode and picked up a few tips yourself. If you ever want to share your thoughts on the episode, please do on social media. You can tweet me at Pretty Personal or send me a DM on Instagram, again at Pretty Personal. Or if you're old school, you can always email me at itspertypersonal@gmail.com. Again, don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast, because I do release new episodes every single Tuesday. And trust me, there will be no more breaks for this season. Take care. Bye.